This is Talent in the Age of AI, the podcast helping leaders navigate what AI means for their people, their culture, and their future. We talk with the thinkers and practitioners shaping how we work, learn, and lead, and what it takes to keep talent growing in a world that's constantly changing. We create, curate, and connect the insights and the community that helps leaders build AI confidence in themselves and in their teams. Let's dive in. Welcome to the Talent in the Age of AI podcast. Talent in the Age of AI is where we discuss how AI is working in talent development, HR, and the executive leadership sphere. And our partner in bringing this podcast to you is Brianna Jovan and her company, What's Good Productions. They're a real asset and partner to us, whom I recommend. My guest today is Rich Douglas. He's the principal of Rich Douglas Consulting and the former executive director of the Human Capital Lab. You know Rich from that audience, and he's brought us insightful podcasts in the past and good information in his consulting company. So we're so happy to have you here today with us, Rich.
Well, thank you, Wendy. Glad to be here.
Also, I should say that Rich is on our board of advisors for Talent in the Age of AI. We couldn't have launched this company without his great insights and strategic mind. So I appreciate you being on that board with us to help me in particular. And so I think we're going to give this a working title of AI's Transformative Opportunities for Preparing Your Workforce. And if that sounds like that's a good launch to what you want to talk with us about today, take it away.
I really do. You know, as a lifelong corporate trainer, I and our profession have always wrestled with the question, how do we know that they know? You know, when we're kids and we're growing up and we're even in college, we're tested, you know, and we're constantly poked and prodded and checked on and so forth. And we get tests and grades and GPAs and all this other stuff to say how we're doing. Get into the corporate world, it's a little bit different. Suddenly, any kind of learning experience that we have, we almost never get directly examined on it. You know, usually, you know how it is. You go through corporate training. It's a week-long course on how to have better conversations with people. And then, you know, on Friday afternoon, they hand you your certificate. And you take the binder and the certificate and you go back to your office on Monday and you put it on the shelf. You never look at it again. You don't really know if you know. And the best way to do that, and any trainer will tell you that, using something like, you know, Don Kirkpatrick's model of evaluation, is to get beyond just assessing the learning, but actually assessing the doing, you know, the behavior. It has the performance of that person changed? And then even farther down the road, is that having a business impact? How do we know that they know? So that's the secret sauce that's been in corporate training for decades and decades, is not do they know, but can they do? And how do we know that? Now, it's the bane of our existence in training. We, for so long, you know, we go to the classroom, we do our dance, we tell our jokes, you know, we conduct our training, it's performative art, and then they leave, and they're gone, never to come back. I believe, getting to AI for a moment, I believe AI is going to flip that on us. It's going to demand that we make that move. Because what's going to happen is the opportunity to do learning at a much higher level than just, you know, whether or not somebody remembers what you taught them and pairs it back on a test, or whether they can understand it and talk to it and, you know, on that Monday morning back to work and say, and someone says, hey, Rich, what'd you learn in school last week? Oh, yeah, well, we talked about this and we talked about that. That's that kind of level of understanding. But getting above that, and for those of you who were in the training world, be familiar with Bloom's taxonomy, climbing up that ladder a little bit and finding out whether or not people can apply what they've learned and be able to even perhaps analyze what's going on and maybe even evaluate it. And if we're really fortunate, we've developed people to a way that they can be creative and they can lead organizations into new realms of existence to take advantage of new opportunities that come up, to take on threats that they never saw coming. So AI, through large language models, for example, give us an opportunity to get past just that you tell me, I tell you, and I tell you that you told me, and then you tell me what I got wrong, and then I tell you again until we finally go, okay, yeah, you understand it. So we really have an opportunity to go beyond that level of understanding and really get to more complexity. AI will change all of that. And let me explain simply why. There have been a handful of transformative technologies that have come along in humankind since the Industrial Revolution. Well, you can even go back farther to the movable type printing press, Gutenberg. But the Industrial Revolution has seen a really rapid speed up of that process. We're seeing more and more technologies, and this has continued for the last 150 years since the Industrial Revolution began. Most recently, I would offer that the telephone was hugely transformative. It absolutely took away other forms of communication. Another one was the development of the World Wide Web laid on top of the internet, where now, think about it, if you've been around for a while, think about how everything is pushed through the internet, including this experience we're sharing today. Everything's pushed through the internet, and we just take it for granted that it'll be there, that we can do what we can do. In fact, if you can't work through the internet, you often can't get things done. You know, my wife will call it a do-it-yourself world, where so much has been shifted to the individual consumer because of our ability to access these technologies almost seamlessly. Some people think the iPhone was a form of transformative technology. I disagree. I think it just allowed us to do things better and smaller and walk around with it in our pocket, but we still engage the same way. AI is transformative. It's not just a matter of being able to easily look up things. It is driven in a way that is completely different from our previous engagements with the technology that underlies it, again, the internet. Whereas now, not only can we query and ask things in normal language, we get back synthesized almost artificial intelligence, which is what AI stands for, back to us. Now, that doesn't mean that we just can accept things at face value, just like you can't accept what somebody has put on a website at face value. It still requires us to understand things in context and so forth, but it really will change how we do all kinds of things, including the way we train people. No longer will it be necessary to do the basics with the very high impact, high expense method of putting people in a room with an instructor standing in front of them, telling them what's available elsewhere. Those behaviors are going to be supplanted. They're just unnecessary.
Even today, you know, maybe because of COVID that all ended where people weren't flying to Cincinnati for that workshop, but they're still having on WebEx or Zoom or something. But I'm going to lead into what I think you're going to say. Even that is no guarantee to know what they know just because they sat there and they reported in. Yes, I attended this training for 2 hours, Tuesday and Thursday. Check, you know. And I'm just recalling the old days when training and development, their report card was on how many employees went through X trainings. And we spent our budget.
It really is.
It wasn't like, what did anybody?
Butts and seats.
Yeah. So I love where you're going. I want to take a quick break for an ad to pay the bills, and we'll come right back to you.
AI isn't just coming, it's here. But for HR and L&D leaders, the real challenge isn't the technology. It's translating AI into workforce capability and leadership behavior. At Talent in the Age of AI, we center everything around one question. So what? What does AI actually mean for how you develop people and prepare your organization? Don't just react to change, lead it. Become a member today at talentintheageofai.com.
So to continue the conversation, what this is going to allow us to do is give us bandwidth to do more with the information that we've acquired, because we've acquired it in such a direct, simple way. And I'll use an analogy. Think about before there were personal computers available. How did people go from what was in their heads to putting it in front of somebody else? You had to write it down, or you had to type it. And then somebody else had to take it, and maybe somebody else edited it and retyped it. And then if you had a typo, you had to retype it. And all this intense labor that now sounds ridiculous. 40 years ago, there were people called word processors. This was their job, you know, and somebody would bring that just like in the old days when you saw it in the black and white TV, where you might have a steno pool or something like that, or a secretary pool. That's what a word processor was. You would bring paper to that person and say, I've written this, type it up for me. And then they would give it back to you. And then you would edit it and with in ink and then bring it back to the person and they would make the changes. And well, that's all gone now because we do that ourselves. So much of what's basic about learning and development in the workplace is going to be done by the individuals themselves. They're not going to need to be taught anymore. They will have the ability to learn, and that's a big shift. We talk about it all the time, but we don't do it. We still conduct training, corporate training, for the most part, as if they were six-year-olds in a first-grade classroom, sitting at their desks, paying attention to the central figure. That is finally going to get pushed aside because AI will be powerful enough to do those basics, to do that information out, feedback back, redirect, and so forth. And that's going to be able to be done before a person ever walks into a classroom, virtual or otherwise. When we talk about virtual training for a moment, look what we're doing. We're just simulating the classroom. That's all we're doing, and we're doing it poorly, because we don't have any of the interpersonal dynamics of the classroom. So it's hard enough when you conduct a class online to get people to turn their cameras on, much less actually remain engaged. Whereas in the classroom, as a trainer, you feel like you have more control. Well, all that's going to be unnecessary because you're not going to need to do those things anymore. In fact, with large language models in AI, most of the stuff that you need to remember and understand and even to some extent apply will be provided for you through the large language model. And there are two keys to this. The two keys are, one, the data the AI model has available to it, and two, your prompts, the things that you ask it to tell you. And it's not the first prompt. The first prompt typically is what you might type into a search bar on Google or Bing or whatever your choice, whatever your choice is. But it's the follow-ups. It's the digging in deeper. The deeper you go, the more large language models, if they have access to good data, will be able to come back with complexity. All right, so where does that lead in terms of evaluation? Well, because students are going to get the basics already, we want them to perform at higher levels of sophistication with that knowledge. In other words, we want them to be able to think with it. Well, if we're going to do that, then we're challenged as whether we are our corporate trainers or whether we are managers and leaders and supervisors and so forth in those roles, we're going to be challenged with elevating performance to those higher levels.
I want to add one more coupling to what you just said. Sharon Spano is a person that you know, a fellow consultant. We've had her on the Talent in the Age of AI podcast. She shared with me, she spent 4 hours in a discussion back and forth with her AI board of directors, getting to the refinement of that first question. And so if we're impatient and we think it's that first prompt, to your point, it's not just better prompts, it's conversations and probing, right? Mm-hmm. So I love
it is
that.
And being willing to go where that leads you, as opposed to saying, I know the path I'm on. And I'll give you the perfect analogy, which is your GPS in your car. If you say to your GPS, I want to go to restaurant A, it will give you a route. It will tell you, this is how you get there. If you deviate from that route, what does it do?
Reroutes you.
It reroutes you back to that direction. But what if that's not the best place to go anymore? The Douglas Adams, who wrote Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, once said, I did not end up where I started out, but I think I ended up where I was supposed to be. And what he's hinting at is something new, something different called developmental evaluation. Now, when I say new, I mean 15 or 20 years ago, but in the corporate world, that's still new.
Right.
Because we're so slow to adapt this. Developmental evaluation powered by AI and demanded by AI will be about a more continuous loop of evaluation and understanding and knowing, are we where we need to be or should we be somewhere else? And ooh, we are somewhere else. Is that where we need to be? So if we challenge individual workers to do this, to be more complex in their thinking, to use these tools, think of it like you're a kid and you're trying to get to the cookie jar mom put on the top shelf, and you've got a chair and a phone book. For those of you that are a little bit younger, it was a book where you could actually flip through pages and look up phone numbers and whatever to get to the cookie jar. Right. Well, that's what AI is going to allow us to do, is to take those initial steps and to get to higher levels of performance. Now, you talked about pressure for a moment. If you are a mid manager, you're that VP level, or perhaps that's, the manager level, you're feeling pressure from two ends. Yes, you're feeling pressure from the top, be more efficient and so forth. But you are also going to feel pressure from the bottom up, because a lot of your employees are going to be sophisticated. They're going to go after this. They're going to get ahead of this. They're going to get deeply involved in AI. And you are going to be pressured to stay ahead of them. Now, I used to say in leadership development, sometimes you just have to be one step ahead of the people you lead. And that's enough. Well, it's going to be a lot harder to do that, to be able to use these tools.
You are absolutely right. It's statistically shown that employees want to use AI. They're just waiting to be led. They need their leader to use it. And if you want to tell me how to use it at work, or what's allowed, or what are the rails, or what's our policy, then do it. But I'm going to use it. There are still companies that forbid use of AI at work, which I think is inane. Back to your point that this is the most powerful computer everybody has. So really stop it. But they're waiting for leaders to lead. In this sphere, maybe more than ever before.
I'm ancient. So when I went through my MBA program, the idea of having computers on desks was relatively new and radical in the early 80s. And I remember my management of information systems instructor saying, hey, you want to implement PCs in the workplace? Put one on the boss's desk and have that boss work through that computer. Everybody else will get in line. They'll all do it too, because that he or she's now expecting communications and data, et cetera, to come through that system. I think she was right then. I think she's right now. It's the same thing here. But getting back to evaluation, because we will get a more sophisticated workforce who's more capable at higher levels of learning, we're going to have to get on top of, well, how do we know that they know? And that means that our evaluative methods can no longer be what we're used to doing, which is checking knowledge. Typically speaking, we have what are called formative evaluations, where we see how they're doing. They're like, we check in to see. And if you think of a classroom, it might be a quiz or a conversation or something like that. Depends upon where you're at. But even in the corporate environment, I might, give people an exercise to work, and then I'm checking their knowledge by doing that. Or maybe I'm interacting with somebody, turning left, turning right, managing a conversation. And that's my way as an instructor of checking in. Well, guess what? That learning is going to be done already when they walk in the door, virtually or otherwise. Now what? Now we're going to have to do things that are more creative. So now, instead of say, here's a case study, and case studies are used in corporate learning all the time. Here's a case study. Tell us what happened here. We're going to go far beyond that and be able to say, well, what would you do next? What would you do beyond this? It used to be, it's so funny, in business school and in the corporate world, we would very often tell people with a case study, don't go beyond the case, only use what's there. Now we're going to have to flip that completely 180 and go where you need to go. Tell us the future here. Tell us where this is going. Tell us what could be done here, and not just what went wrong, but actually what are the opportunities that are hidden there, that are presented, that can be inferred. And that means we, as leaders, we need to be ready to evaluate the answer to those questions. It's not going to be enough just to ask. We'll need to get on top of it and be able to, and that means learning these tools and being comfortable with them and being able to say, all right, I can demand more of people. I can demand that they be more creative. And in the adult development world, one of the key ways to see a person's stage of development is how they handle complexity. How do they handle complexity? The unknown, the acronym we often use is VUCA, you know, volatile, uncertain, and so forth. How do they handle, you know, the confusion? How do they handle the unknown? How do we say, we want this better, but we don't know what better means, but we know we want better, you know? How do they handle that? A lot of people fall back and go, wait a minute, I'll wait and you tell me.
Yeah.
But and some of your employees are going to get ahead of you.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's,
but some aren't. Right. Some are going to say, I'm ready to charge ahead.
You know, Rich, many years ago, I hate this term, but I'm an idea person. I generate ideas. I just love to. I always have. I read that CEOs are, all they do is solve problems all day long. They're about a problem. And they would just die for somebody to bring them an idea. Because, you know, that's what's going to move the company forward and always has. Look at all these great global companies. They've always had the idea to die for. And this is going to enable that if a person is confident enough and adept enough at continuing the conversation, building the prompts, accepting what you just said. Maybe AI is going to serve you something that you didn't even expect, a route you didn't want to go to get to the cookie jar. But you're like,
yep,
okay.
The path in the rearview mirror was probably not the one you planned. And so, I mean, you know, Lily Tomlin, the wonderful comedian, at once asked, what would the world like if we all grew up to be what we wanted to be when we were five? You know, a world of, you know, ballerinas and police officers and so forth. Nobody sets out to be a design engineer when they're five. Somehow, somewhere along the way, they get into that route. They get into that path. So then what do you do with it? AI is kind of like that. We don't know where we're going to end up. So that means we need to be as equipped as possible. Just like if you were a soldier going into battle, you have all kinds of weaponry, you have all kinds of protective equipment, but you're also bringing food and water and some of that stuff with you too, because you don't know what's going to happen.
Right? Extra
and
socks.
Your ability to deal with the unknown. Yeah, extra socks hanging around your neck because you don't know. You don't know what's going to come up. And explorers experience this, you know, and so do we in the workplace. We experience this as well if we're paying attention, you know. Have you ever flown B&O Airlines?
No.
Oh, no, because it doesn't exist.
Okay.
But B&O Railroad did, not just in Monopoly, but in real life.
Yeah.
But they're gone. They're gone because they were in the railroad business. See, and when the railroad business became not how people traveled in terms of passenger travel, they disappeared. But if they saw themselves not as a railroad company, but saw themselves as a company that makes sure people get from one place to the other, you'd have an airline because that's how people travel now. Bus lines are the same thing. There should be a Greyhound Airways right now. No, there is. We call it Southwest. Okay. It did it. It did. Somebody else stepped in and said, we can do what Greyhound and what Continental Railways does, but in the air, you know? And now a ticket on Greyhound is as expensive as a ticket on Southwest to go from point A to point B. And there's a reason for that, because they saw themselves differently. And that comes from complexity and the willingness to go into the unknown. AI represents all of that. So what do we do as leaders? What do? We do really a couple of things. First, and this is kind of what we were talking about earlier, we need to get on top of this. We need to be able, in order for us to evaluate and understand what people can do and will do, we need to understand it. Because we're still supposed to be the big heads as leaders thinking about all the possibilities. But our people are going to be more and more equipped to do this on their own. So that means we need to stay ahead of that. Not because we need to be better than they are. There was once, and I don't know who said it, but an Army general who said, of course I follow my people, for I am their leader. So there will be some of that. There will be some of that where people will get ahead of you. That's okay. As long as you're in the game too. So learning AI, learning its potentials and its capabilities, and be sensitive to the ideas above, like in Bloom's taxonomy, where we talk about more sophisticated levels of learning and performance. Being aware of that is key. Otherwise, we could find ourselves repressing the very thing we would encourage, because we become afraid of it. We become worried about it. We don't want people to make us uncomfortable with their, you know, newfangled ideas and so forth. We actually want that. I would rather have wild horses that I can team and bring together than old, you know, nags who are ready for the glue factory. So having people present you these challenges, we need to be comfortable with it. We do that by learning what this is about, what AI is about. The second thing we need to do is we need to change our expectations of people. Change our expectations and look for the people who are synthesizing information and creating new ideas. Look for those kinds of challenges. You know, you mentioned before about people, essentially the saying goes, don't bring me problems, bring me solutions. There's also bring me problems you can't work because of the complexity of them, and we'll do them together. We'll team together and work these issues. So you can bring me problems that you can't solve. That's fine. But then we're going to team. We're going to work together on this. And that means that I, as the leader, I'm putting myself in that position for a moment, then I need to be not only about artificial intelligence, but comfortable with it, even with the things I don't yet know. And that way we can encourage people to go beyond not only their capabilities, but even beyond ours, and be able to take advantage of that. It doesn't mean we can't still be effective leaders, because, I mean, I've spent a career as a leader, and inevitably there were people on my team smarter than me, sometimes more capable than me.
Right. Well, you mean there's always something you can learn, Rich? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Right. We don't have to have all the answers as leaders. All our audience out there, vice president level, director, you don't need to have the answers about AI. Yeah. You just have to have the openness and the approach and understand that your teams want you to lead them there, or to your point, be led. I love that.
Locking it out, locking it down, holding it back. And so it's going to work about as well as Prohibition did in the 20s, okay, where everybody's going to do it anyway, okay? You just made it illegal, but you didn't stop it. All right. And you slowed it down, unfortunately. In the case of AI, you may slow it down to where your people aren't adopting it as quickly and as seamlessly as they should. But that just means you're an impediment. You know, it's not going away. You can't, you know, close your eyes, hold your breath, and wish. And in fact, you shouldn't. You shouldn't, because we're going to go beyond that business of learning, you know, of just checking learning, you know, which is level two in Kirkpatrick. It's the learning level. Do they know? But rather, can they do? And what impact does it have? We'll be freed up to really focus on those. And that's where the money's made. That's where the business is. The business happens. Okay. And in order to bring the organization to that level of focus, we need to accept tools that are helping us rise up to that. And that's what AI is doing. So in order to perform at that level and evaluate at that level, we need to accept the fact that those earlier levels are now taken care of. Otherwise, we might as well go back to stone tablets and we chop out a message and schlep it somewhere else to somebody. We don't do that. We think that's crazy. Well, guess what? In 20 years, people will look back at the ones who kind of tried to repress this technology instead of embrace it as the ones who were cracking out messages on stone tablets. This is going to be one of the definitive technologies of our lives. And in order to evaluate it, we need to move from evaluating in the classroom, whether it's the boardroom or the training room or the classroom in higher education or wherever, and move it into performance. Can people do what we challenge them to do using these tools? So, using a simple example, let's say a professional organization, let's say the Project Management Institute, pick on them for a minute. In order to get their designation, the project management professional, you have to qualify, you have to have experience, and you have to have some training, but you have to sit down for a test. And in order to pass that test, you have to go to this antiseptic room, which practically like, well, actually, I know firsthand experience, it's harder to get into one of those rooms than it is to get into the CIA. Okay, I've done both. It's harder to go sit for an exam in one of those places, those testing centers, than it is to get in, like I said, to get in and have a classified conversation with a spy. As a result, we strip away everything that person could possibly have access to in their real lives. And we sit them in front of a computer with a mouse and we have them click answers. And if they click enough right answers, they're a project management professional. And this is not just the PMP. ATD does this. SHRM does this. Every organization that I've ever had a professional credential does this. And it doesn't mean you can do it. Imagine instead if we were using AI and enabling people to have all the tools that they normally have on the job, and we assess their performance on real world or simulated real world experiences, where now instead of clicking A, B, C, or D, or E, none of the above, instead I'm having to create real answers. And maybe I type them out, or maybe I speak them into a microphone. And my AI, large language model, can then evaluate what I say, or evaluate what I draw, or what I type, and be able to say, this person really, you know, gets it. Or this other person is only getting it at the understanding level. They can pare back the data. But this other person can synthesize or create, and that's where the money's going to be made. That's where we, as corporate trainers, which is what I am, and leaders, are going to really see the benefit of learning using AI. It's that ability to assess at that level. Our large language models can do this for us now. If we want to be creative enough about the interfaces, they can do it for us now. They have the robust capability now. So we can already have large language machines say to us, hey, I've read what you've written. This is what I think of it. I think you pass. And by the way, these are some areas you might want to pay attention to when you walk out of here. We can do that. And guess what? We don't have to go to the antiseptic classroom to do it. We can do it from anywhere, because now it's kind of like going from a closed book, blue book test where we're writing down things like they do with the bar exam, to open book, real world, all of my tools available. The only way to do that is to move beyond paring back information and instead using it to create new ideas.
You talked in our prep for this about this is really enabling an individual to own her own career path and her trajectory if she embraces it appropriately for the company or whatever. But I'm picturing when you said that, I don't have to wait for the next class starts, even if it's a webinar or something. It can be self-paced. But it also is revealing, like you just said, it could go back to not exactly, you're not exactly there and showing me that you would get how to apply that to this problem. I mean, I think individuals just got a lot more agency with AI. Do you?
They do. I was playing around with a research idea and I was bouncing it off ChatGPT. I have an account there. And I asked the question that the average student won't ask. I said, what's wrong with my ideas? Tell me what's wrong.
I love that.
And then it did. It complimented me first, because they always do that, right? Great question. And then it told me all the things that were wrong with, or potentially wrong or weak in my research idea.
Oh, I love that.
Which allowed me to advance my thinking in ways that I had not anticipated, because I asked an open-ended question, something you couldn't do before, but now you can. That doesn't mean that it's just, you know, I'm just regurgitating what the machine said. What the machine said is, here's some other areas you can look at. You probably should pay attention to these, you know. In fact, last night, I asked ChatGPT, how does developmental evaluation interface with AI? Because I've used the concept behind developmental evaluation, which we talked about earlier today, you know, for years. But I hadn't really thought of it in terms of the AI context. And I got several pages, and it was all aligned with the things I know. And it was really about saying, hey, this is an open-ended technology. And developmental evaluation is an open-ended way of assessing your progress. Duh. So the point is that we can be as open minded and open-ended as we want to be. And that means for evaluation purposes, if we challenge people in the right way, in the more complex way, to have them actually analyze what's going on, create new ideas and so forth, The whole thing can be open book, can be open computer, can be open everything. It can be open a beer if it's 5 o'clock. Let's go. It can be wherever you want to be and allow people to use all the tools that are available to them to assess their learning, because we're assessing it at a creative level to see whether or not they're able to actually use what's in front of them to create new ideas and to head in new directions. And again, that's the height of it. Any company who's found a success can stay in the loop and keep doing that, but maybe not forever. At some point, you know, maybe, just maybe, McDonald's, for example, will have to develop a hamburger with a tomato on it that actually sells. They're going to have to get out of their loop and do something different. And so it's a metaphor for a much bigger issue, is that we can get out of our loops using AI if we let people do it.
Rich, you and I have worked together for years in the talent management sphere, the Human Capital Lab, et cetera. Confidence was often an outcome of someone earning her degree. That newfound confidence that not only can I learn, I can demonstrate my learning. I have taught at the college level seniors at a renowned private university. And I might have been the first professor that had them present a 60-second radio commercial in front of the whole class. And their palms were sweaty and they just didn't think they could do it. By the end of the class, it was, you know. So what I want to say is I think there are still a lot of people in organizations in the ranks who don't have that confidence to speak up in a meeting, ask a dumb question, right? There are no dumb questions. But AI and the language models, they allow me to ask a dumb question.
Yeah,
even
good
out
point.
There and make me feel stupid, but it's not a human. It's my friend on the other end. Like you just said, it said to you, great start, Rich, but it could be better. You know, it's a safe space to bounce your ideas off of your board of directors online and get the response back. Maybe you gain confidence to walk into your VP's office the next day and say, I have this idea. It may not be perfect, but what do you think? That confidence is underestimated throughout organizations and companies today, I think. Not everybody is Rich Douglas or Wendy Wiseman that just kind of says what we think. But I do remember being 26 years old, invited to a Wheels meeting and being so afraid to speak up. And when I finally got the courage to do it and people looked at me like maybe I had something to add, I still remember that moment when it was bored in my brain. But the personal courage it required of me was immense.
You know, it's kind of funny. You're using AI as a mentor at that point. Right. And you're saying, essentially, I can try these ideas out with this trusted person who's not going to go leaking it. Or, you know, as you said, you know, I'm in a board meeting or I'm in some sort of staff meeting or whatever. And I know that silence is safe. You know, silence is safe. Nobody's ever going to, you know, what is it? What was the saying? If you're afraid of sounding ignorant, open your mouth and prove it. I mean, it's scary. But like you said, I never really thought of it that way. But if you're able to go to an AI bot and be able to bounce ideas off of it, one, you're right. You'll be able to try your idea out ahead of time, see whether it's got any validity or basis. You don't run the risk of sounding dumb and therefore having the next thing you say ignored. But also, as we talked about today, it takes you into new areas, maybe areas you didn't anticipate. Just preparing for this podcast, it took me into two areas I had not thought about related to AI. One of them I mentioned before about evaluating along the way, which is what developmental evaluation is all about. So we can evaluate people's performance and not just what they learned and what they paired back on a test. We can actually do that over time. And we can shift the evaluation to go with where the realities shift and take us as well. But the other thing that my looking into this last night really reminded me is it's global.
Yeah.
It's global. It's everywhere. This is not something that's limited to one industry, one culture, one country. It's a concept. It's a concept that is universal. And other than language barriers and some cultural barriers, it really provides us an opportunity to access ideas and thoughts and so forth on a global basis. For example, as you know, I've done a little bit of doctoral research. And in doing that, in the old days, you used to have to learn one or two foreign languages. And the reason was so you could research history of, you know, your subject. You could research it in other cultures than your own. That largely went away. Now, pretty much, you don't have foreign language requirements, especially in degree programs for mid-career professionals. You don't have that at all. But what AI could do is it could allow you now to access that kind of information in a context and in a way that you could read it, even if you don't read that language. So I could go and say, you know, what are the leading thoughts on structure versus object theory in sociology in the UK? And then when I get that, I can say, and how does that compare to Australia? Oh, and by the way, is there any difference in Africa and other parts of Africa, maybe Southern Africa, Northern Africa? We can start going and going, and I can access thinking and information as a researcher that I never could. Well, why couldn't you do that as a business person? Why wouldn't you also be able to access thinking and values? You know, we talk about this all the time with business, you know, in business about being culturally aware. I mean, I have a daughter-in-law's brother who works in Bulgaria for a team that's in London for a US corporation, IBM. All right. So he's in Bulgaria working for a team centered in London for a US corporation. That is some serious culture hopping. Well, imagine if you're able to use AI to smooth over some of those things before you open your mouth. If in this environment with these people, if I said this, were there any cultural booby traps?
I love that analogy.
Can you imagine how much safer would you feel? This is getting back to your safety issue.
Yeah.
How much safer would you feel? And how could we use that to evaluate somebody's idea? What would be the cultural impact of taking this to the UAE and have that evaluation given back to us before we ever do it? Before we ever go over there and trip on ourselves on something we never saw coming, because AI now allows us to access. Yes.
Globally.
And so that's it.
There is an opportunity. Here's a very simplistic example you've brought to my mind. I know a person who has a person whose second language is English, knows more English than I know Spanish. So, however, the written word is not ideal. And he was complaining that he had to kind of smooth out this document. I said, why would you do that? Why don't you just have him put it in chat and have it kick it back out in American English, having written it in a Word doc, and call it good? Time saving, the confidence level, and also that idea of being heard, read, understood, respected. I just think it's incredible what this allows, but you have to think of it at the simplest level. And then the real high level, like you're talking about, too.
And you know how when you read something that is poorly written, it throws you off to the point maybe you can't access
it. Does.
Centering ideas underneath it. But what if that was eliminated? And now you can evaluate at that higher level. Now you can say, let me look at these ideas, because they're presented in a way that I'm not tripping over the presentation style itself, you know, or what it's lacking. And being Conan the grammarian, I'm always caught up in little things like that. And
yeah,
I might
too.
Miss the bigger picture, which is what the message is. It's that the lower levels, that's all eliminated. And now we're able to communicate at a much higher level. And now I can really pay attention to the person's ideas, you know, which are formulated probably really well in his or her native language, in his or her head. But now with a little bit of assistance, you know, we build ramps for people with wheelchairs. Well, AI can certainly be a ramp towards a lot of other things that we would not normally have access to, but we should.
Early in my career, I wrote every memo that my brilliant Georgetown-educated VP, English as a second language person, I got the concept, but he needed me to write the memos, the white papers that would sell it into his peers in the C-suite. And now I'm understanding why, for the first time after all this time. Sarah Truchard is another guest you know. She's in the HR department at Citco. They need a 500 character description for their jobs. And she allows people to use AI to help them massage it, fine-tune it, break it down. She gives them guardrails. But to get to, you know, important. There's not the same playing field for everybody that is supposed to submit 500 characters. They're not at the same level. You're the, would you just quote Conan the Grammarian? Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I'm an editor by trade. Doesn't mean mine would be perfect, but you know, I think just to have that help. And here's another analogy I want you to speak to. When I was young in my career, I had degrees from the University of Nebraska and the University of Missouri. And my company was all about Wharton and Duke grads and everything coming in and blowing in. And yes, I'm sure they had outstanding educations and they deserved to go there. But I feel like kind of there was a great intimidation factor for me. And my analogy, maybe help me out here, Rich. Now they're hiring for AI prompt managers, AI adaption managers. They're bringing in these titles that are bound to intimidate other people sitting there going, well, what am I? Yeah. Right? I mean, Don't you think they might?
Yeah. And unfortunately, that's just window dressing in most cases. That's just changing the flavor of, you know, the going from cherry to grape in the Slurpee machine. It's not changing anything. They're just they're slapping AI around because they think it's the new hot thing. Oh, well, we got to say that. Now, there's also some real work going on because, again, remember, the two things that make large language machines or large language models go are the prompting and the data that it has access to. So there is some learning to be done on how to work these devices. So there is some of that. But in large part, you're going to see where it's being treated like a fad. It's not a fad. It is, as I said in the very beginning, it is a transformative technology. You're being hired for, let's say you're being hired to be a, you know, middle manager of a company, and they called it, you know, accounts receivable supervisor and typist. What? And typist? Well, you're going to spend all day at a keyboard. You're going to be typing all day long. Yeah, but I wouldn't put that in the job title. You know? That kind of given. And here's the trick. When AI is quit showing up like that, then you know it's been integrated.
I love that.
Then you know people are going, it's another tool. It's another tool in the toolbox.
You're so right to circle back to our title, The Transformative Opportunities Brought to Preparing Your Workforce by Adopting AI. Thank you so much.
I want to leave your listeners with one last thought.
Great.
This is from the philosopher Erasmus. And he said, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. And folks, you don't need to know everything about AI. You just need to get to it right now. Because if you know a little bit, you know more than the person next to you. And this is a good thing, as Martha Stewart would remind us. So AI, it's a good thing.
It's a core tenet of talent in the age of AI. We embrace it enthusiastically, and we bring latest practices and not so much theory, but we bring it from the people who know how to make it work, and that includes you. So again, thank you.
Glad we were here.
Thanks for listening to Talent in the Age of AI. If this conversation gave you new ways to grow in your own work and to better support your people, follow the show and share it with others in your HR and talent network. Members get even more. Full episode transcripts, extended show notes, and companion resources to help you put these insights into action. Learn more and join us at talentintheageofai.com. We're here to help leaders create, curate, and connect what's needed to build tomorrow's workforce today. See you next time.